Slay the Nazarene, and you will know the violent raptures of my father's kingdom. Fail, and you will be condemned to a numbing eternity in the flaccid bosom of Christ. Do you hear me?
I love doing it. I don't know.
It's the little things. Hey, everybody, and welcome back once again to Podcast Part 3, the Part 3 Podcast, your go-to source for all things about movies that came after two other movies. I am Sam.
And I am Will.
And today we are talking about, it's Shrequel season, Shrequel threequel season. And we're talking about a quote-unquote scary threequel. It's The Final Conflict. Or Omen 3, The Final Conflict, because they straight up forgot to call it Omen 3 when they released it.
Yeah, it's so weird. This is a very strange movie.
It's definitely like one of those movies that's like, we're going to call it The Final Conflict. You won't know it's an Omen movie, but the beginning of the movie is just clearly telling the audience, you should know what these daggers are.
I had to look it up because I had totally forgotten that they're like a big part of the first Omen. I've only seen the first Omen. I've never seen Omen 2.
I saw Omen 2 a long time ago. It's another quintessential military academy horror movie.
Of course.
It's got William Holden in it. It was directed by Podcast Part 3 alum Don Taylor of Escape from the Planet of the Apes fame.
Oh, all right then.
And it's fine. It's fine. It lacks the panache of the first one, or the sort of silliness of this one.
I had forgotten sort of at the end of the first one where Gregory Peck is trying to kill Damien with one of those daggers. So that's, and then I guess they become a big part in part two and end up in Chicago.
So The Omen is, for those of you that are unfamiliar or haven't seen it in a while, or have only seen the remake or the short-lived TV series Damien, it's
or the recent The First Omen, which just came out
this
year.
Which I actually heard was pretty good. I have yet to see it. I mean, I don't see movies because except these movies. No, so The Omen is the quintessential evil little boy antichrist movie. It's Gregory Peck. He's the American ambassador to the court of St. James, and he has a son, and it's not his kid, it's actually the antichrist. And when he figures this out, it's like everyone around him starts dying, and it's about trying to stop this evil little boy and his minions. And in the end of the movie, he fails, and his son, both Gregory Peck and his wife are dead, and his son Damien, the Antichrist, has survived. Fast forward to Omen 3, and Damien is now 32 years old, and he's Sam Neill, and he has some real flat plastic hair, and he's the head of Thorn Industries, and he's considered one of the most famous and benevolent millionaires in the world, even though, I'm sorry, this man is straight up weird. Like, even without the Antichrist thing, this is just a weird guy.
He's a weird-looking guy. He talks weird. He acts very strange.
He's so soft-spoken, but not in, like, a gentle way. Like, no. It's like, and he's like, you have to make me the head of the United Nations Youth Council.
Yeah, you're like, why the Youth Council, dude? What is this? Oh man, he gives up straight creeper vibes like all throughout, and like
I kind of like it at first. We all love Sam Neill, and I think most people that don't only know Sam Neill from Jurassic Park don't know that he has like a few roles in there where he plays like straight up crazies. Like you've got this, you've got Event Horizon, you've got In the Mouth of Madness, and he's really good in those parts. And he's good in this. I think the script is a little muddy. But I really love the first act where I love the scene. So he's the head of this company, and he's about to be appointed to his father's position because he now knows that he's
the Antichrist.
Well, he knows that, and he's fine with that. He's fully evil now. But he also knows that the second coming of Christ is imminent, and that will be a threat to him, and he will grow weaker the longer the Nazarene walks the earth. So he's orchestrating this plan, and he has all these followers. But there's this great scene when you first see him. He's doing like interviews and watching commercials for his corporation and all the charitable work they're doing, and he's dealing with like his political connections, and he's talking with his like his number two guy, who is just this normal bespectacled guy, and they're talking business, and then he's like, basically just very dryly segues into, oh, by the way, the Nazarene is about to be born, so we're heading to England and we have to kill him. And it's like you realize, oh, they're just totally, there's something so bland about it, and it's so great because it's a seamless transition from like normal corporate weird to like, oh, this guy's like, you know, he's fully in on it.
He's getting ready. Yeah, it is. It does sort of like speak to that like banality of evil kind of idea, which
I think they could,
which is like a thread in here, and it kind of gets dropped real fast.
Yeah, the first act does a lot with that. The scene with the president too.
Yeah, yeah.
And I wish they did more with that, because I think that would have made the movie hold up a lot better.
Right. I mean, I think the problem is that it can't sort of decide how it wants Damien to be, whether they want Damien to be like cackling supervillain evil or like sort of more understated and not necessarily nuanced, but more sort of that like I'm evil and this like sort of the banality bureaucratic stuff. And sort of the movie can't kind of figure out which tone it's trying to play with that. And then eventually he just becomes a cackling supervillain by the end of the movie. Which is fun, because Sam Neill's fun when he does that, but it doesn't work for the movie that they're trying to make,
yeah.
I think.
And it's like you really want, like, the fact that he set up, he's a massive international corporation, he's incredibly powerful, he has political connections, he's got the, you know, the ear of the president, he has followers, like satanic followers, everywhere he goes, he basically has superpowers.
Yeah.
I think the thing that the biggest problem I have with the movie is that they don't change the stakes at all from the first movie. It's the same dynamic where it's this insurmountable evil and the heroes are scrambling to catch up to it. And in this, it's the same thing, even though the movie in the first act sets up that the like these priests and astronomers are fully aware that the second coming of Christ is happening and that they have to organize and kill Damien. They are... I think it's the problem is at this point, I don't think the fight between good and evil should be so lopsided.
Right. Well, and you know, and if when we get into the plot of the Nazarene that Damien cooks up, I agree. I mean, and it seems like the good side shouldn't be this far on their back foot. They know that the second coming of Christ is happening, they know that Damien is here, and they feel like bumbling dopes.
It's like on one side you have an international cabal of minions, superpowers, and millions of dollars, and this charismatic leader, and on the other side you have what I would can only describe as like six or seven Sergio Leone extras who get one dagger. I'm like, this is the thing in The Exorcist. When someone's possessed by a demon, you go down to Georgetown, you go to the Jesuit library, and there is a manual for what to do. It's like, in this movie, it is like, call the Pope.
Call anyone. Like, why is it left to these, like, six guys? Like, the first guy who tries to assassinate Damien, like, trips on, like, on a rope and, like, sets himself on fire.
A bunch of chuckle fucks. I swear to God, man. I swear to God. This is the team you assembled.
And then when Damien institutes his plan, which is to, like, murder all, like, male-born children from born at a certain hour, they do nothing to protect these babies.
All right. We're going to jump around here because this is a silly movie and its plot is very silly. But when he determines that that the second coming of Jesus was born between midnight and 6 a.m. on this one day in England, so he basically orders all his minions which is convenient because apparently all little English boys are evil.
Evil, yeah.
So they're always on hand to kill babies. He orders all these kids to be killed, all these newborn babies. So if you don't like the implication of newborn infants being horribly murdered,
this is not the movie for you.
But then, off screen, whichever kid is actually Jesus, just suddenly the main priest, the last priest standing, says, like, he is beyond Damien's reach. You know, it's like, when? When did that? You spent the whole middle act setting up that his right-hand man's son
right.
may actually be the second coming of Christ, and then you just, no, gonna kill that kid with a fucking iron.
Yeah, that was
a... just like, well, I was just annoyed. I was like, oh, I don't want to see another, like, kid get killed.
Yeah.
I'm not into that. But then I was also like, oh, so this plot went nowhere.
Yeah, it's like a double whammy of, like, annoying things. It's like, they're trying to get the shock value of, like, murdering children on screen, murdering babies on screen, and then also, like, it's this plot just runs in circles, and you're like, I thought it was kind of clever as it's setting up, like, oh yeah, this is going to be the second coming of Christ, is Damien's right-hand man's son. I thought that was kind of, like, an interesting idea, which they just sort of brought up and then dropped and then never really addressed who the new Christ child was.
No, you never see them. You Jesus runs in at the very end of the movie. Literally, it's like, am I too late? Did I miss it? See, I think this is the thing I wanted, actually, and I know this sounds ridiculous, but I wanted Jesus versus the Antichrist. Like, what if the second coming was like a older kid? What if it was, like, not necessarily this character, but, like, the reporter's son?
Right.
He discovers, and there is, like, because you think about, like, something like Constantine, like the movie right. Constantine sets up that there are angels and demons just all over the place, and they're constantly in conflict, and, like, shouldn't the second coming of Christ have its own following?
Yeah.
And also, like, have powers that are, you know, maybe for in God's name, but equally terrifying?
Right, yeah. You'd almost want to have, like, this movie be the end of Damien's story, but also you kind of have the inverse of the first Omen, where it's, like, somebody's discovering that they are the Christ child. You know what I mean? Like, that's actually kind of an interesting idea and an interesting movie. I think that would be a lot of drama you could wring out of that, and something that would make this a proper, like, part three, is sort of like coming full circle, you know? End of a trilogy kind of deal, don't you think?
This was not a pre-planned trilogy, I guess, let's be clear.
No, absolutely not. I mean, no. I mean, I think this was, oh, The Omen made a bunch of money, let's make another one. In sort of as the satanic panic of the 80s was ramping up, and sort of every fallout from Rosemary's Baby, including the success of The Exorcist, like, sort of led
to
all of this.
I mean, Satan movies were hot in the streets in the 70s,
because, yeah.
You know, you had The Exorcist, you had Rosemary's Baby, and you had The Omen, and those are all really good movies, and they're all scary movies, and there was definitely, like, a rash of both sort of legitimate and rip-off sequels. Yeah. Lord knows the Italians got in on the Exorcist train real quick. This was released in some European countries as Barbara's Baby.
Amazing.
Not making that up.
Amazing. It's such a, like, it's so weird, because it's like it, like, wants to be bananas and sort of batshit and transgressive, like, oh, we're murdering babies, and, like, Sam Neill's, like, talking to a statue of Christ, and, like,
oh, that is, like, oh my god,
that's
he
a
was
wild,
like, that is such a, someone in 1983 high school drama did that as their monologue.
and but then it's also, like, really boring and staid in a lot of places.
It's so British,
yeah.
And I'll be honest, the original Omen is a really good movie,
yeah.
But it's not one I'll rewatch Rosemary's Baby sometimes. I've rewatched The Exorcist all the time.
Yeah.
I don't, the original is mostly because it's one of those ones, if you on rewatches, you notice all the mistakes that the hero could have avoided.
Yeah, it's one of those, it's a movie that when I saw it, it really scared me. Like, turning on all the lights on the house after I watched it, because it was like, it's genuinely like unsettling that evil wins at the end of the movie.
And it's also, but it's also like has a nice, I mean, it's not ambiguous. The kid is the Antichrist, but there's some like nice ambiguity to the deaths. There are those like great Rube Goldberg deaths, like David Warner getting decapitated or the priest getting impaled. And it's got that Jerry Goldsmith score, you know, with the Latin. Dominus. You know, that thing.
Yeah, I mean, and that's all like, and that's, yeah, exactly. And I think the mystery also helps propel that movie a lot. But on like rewatches, you're kind of like, I don't know. It's like Damien's not scary enough as like, he looks sort of like cherubic and creepy, but it's not.
Yeah, well, he's, I mean, I think his lady, his handler, Billy Whitelaw, she's the main like antagonist in that.
Yeah.
I think it's, Yeah, I mean, it's a good movie. It's just, it's one of those ones where it's like, all right, it maybe doesn't hold up to scrutiny, but everyone making it was on, like, at the top of their game. Because it's Richard Donner as well.
And, no, it is a really solid studio horror movie. And I think, you know, comparing it to The Exorcist 3, you know, I liked that movie sort of discussion about faith versus reason. And, like, I liked all of that and those dynamics, which this movie just doesn't do.
It's I think, as we said when we talked about Exorcist 3, also starring Don Gordon, the number two guy in this. He's one of George C. Scott's detectives in Exorcist 3.
Hell yeah.
So he's in two underappreciated horror threequels. But Exorcist 3 is, as we said when we talked about it, is a movie made by an author.
Right.
And he has lots of ideas and lots of ruminations, and that movie has all sorts of weird symbolism, and it's swinging for the fences, and it doesn't have just one actor who's like taking it to 11. It's got like five or six. You know,
it's true. Yes, but I just mean in terms of like the thematics of that movie. You know,
and also Exorcist 3, I think, has the benefit of it's not trying to kind of repeat the horror beats of the first one.
Right.
It's as different as a sequel can be.
Yeah.
And I think the problem is this is a little bit of diminishing returns, and I think what I would have liked is it's different enough with, like, adult Damien, and he's essentially the protagonist. I would have liked to see them do more with the story rather than him just doing the same shit that they did in the first two movies.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know exactly what that is, either. You know, either you do sort of a more conflicted Damien where he's sort of like, I don't know if I'm, you know, I'm actually, this is my role, or, you know, you sort of do the Last Temptation of the Antichrist, I guess. I don't know if you do that, but, you know, I think there's just something more you can do with him. And this is just feels neither fair nor foul, you know, it's just kind of like...
And I'm old-fashioned, or no, I'm not old-fashioned. I'm not. I like when the devil isn't just straight up evil.
Yeah.
Or it's like there's two types of devils I like in media. I like sexy, like Tom Ellis Lucifer devil, or like Peter Stormare devil, where he's kind of a ambiguous, cool, like not necessarily pure evil character, the fallen angel type devil. Yeah. And then I like sort of undercranked silent movie devil who hops around and you can only beat him in like a fist fight or a fiddle contest. Those are kind of the only two devils I really like.
Yeah.
So anything in, I don't like a Rosemary's Baby devil. I don't like my like baby murdering rapist devil. It's not my favorite take on the character. So I think what I wanted to do, I keep saying I want Jesus in this movie, because Jesus is awesome. he's the Jesus Christ, the first Avenger.
Right.
And he has weird superpowers as well. And I want to see what role would the second coming of Christ have in 1981 culture as a counterpart to Damien Thorne.
Yeah, I mean, and maybe they didn't want to do it because maybe they thought that there would be religious blowback, or maybe they didn't just want to go to like that place. I don't know, but it would make this movie 1,000 times more interesting than it is.
And they set the table for you could have an avenue into. There's this whole thing in the background going on about like this dam getting blown up in North Africa, and Israel's involved, and it's like, what if Jesus came back and was like, on the surface seemed like some sort of political dissident,
right,
or something,
yeah,
like that. Like, because that's kind of what he was.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, I agree. And I think that would be... Honestly, I think it would make it just more interesting, even if the Antichrist and the, you know, the new Christ were peers. You know,
yeah,
I think that might even be more interesting if they were actually in conflict, you know, as peers. I don't know. You know, you have the guy, the political activist on the ground, and then the guy, the head of the multinational corporation on top, you know, and just sort of...
It's just, you don't, without the main character being like Gregory Peck trying to figure it out and stop it, and he's on the back foot racing against clock, it's these idiots on the other side. It's like these seven dudes and this lady reporter, and it's like, come on, give me something. You guys are so bad at this.
And they're so bad. Like, they lose so often. Like, they just, like, they don't even, like, get, like, a shot off, basically. They just...
For a man who is not a practicing Christian, all I want in my movies is to see, like, Max von Sydow caliber super priests show up to fight the devil.
Exactly.
Like, if this is gonna be a story about the battle between good and evil... God versus the devil, you have to have a counterbalance. And in all these fucking movies, God can't, someone needs to wake him up. Or like, because it's like, this is the first time in any of these movies where you even get a sense that God and or Jesus are aware of what's going on.
Yeah, no, it's true. And it's just, you know, you have David Warner in the first movie who sort of stumbles onto it because he figures out the thing with the photographs.
Yeah, and they have a little bit of that with the reporter, which I like. It happens so quickly because it's suddenly all these babies are getting killed,
right,
dying. And the priest goes to her and says, like, even if you're not a person of faith, you're a person of logic,
right,
and, you know, maybe there should have been more of her investigating that,
yeah,
instead of just like that kind of long rough sex scene.
Oh god, yeah, that was really uncomfortable, and I did not appreciate that, because it's like the movie is not, it's not exploitative enough to like pull that off.
No,
you know?
it's not, and it's also just kind of out of character for the way Sam Neill's portrayed the character.
Yeah.
He doesn't seem like, that's not his, that doesn't, he doesn't seem like he's interested in that.
Yeah, it comes out of nowhere. It feels very strange. And part of it is that, like, the way this movie ends is such a wet fart of an ending that it doesn't really, like, lead up to anything. So it's just like, it's like, oh, okay, we tricked Damien. Damien ends up getting the reporter's son stabbed.
Yeah,
then,
the little shit.
And then, yeah.
one of England's many evil little boys.
And then the reporter stabs Damien. He dies. Jesus Christ appears superimposed in the sky, and the movie ends.
Nazarene, you've won nothing. And Jesus is like, this is going to seem so shallow, but what was your name again?
It really is.
It's like, hmm? Oh, hey, what's up?
I'm sorry. What? Who are you? Am
I
supposed to know you?
I just stepped out to have a cigarette. What's going on in here? And then it should have just cut to Judas singing Jesus Christ Superstar, because it's basically the same set as the end of the Ken Russell Jesus Christ Superstar.
Someone needs to make an edit of that where it just. boy.
Yeah, man, 70s and 80s religious movies were, they all wanted to be subversive, and some succeeded where others failed.
And this movie, it's just, it's like one of those, there's a certain vibe that, like, I don't know what it is, but England being filmed in the 70s and 80s, it feels the same in every movie. Like think about an American Werewolf in London.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it feels exactly the same. And
it's that thing where it's like everything feels like it's 10 years out of date.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, And when we were watching it, I was texting you and I was like, this doesn't feel like Hammer, but it feels like an Amicus movie.
Exactly.
You know? I'm waiting for Peter Cushing to come like riding.
Well, God, that's what they needed. They needed like
this movie. If the seven dudes were just get me all the Hammer guys, yeah. Get me Oliver Reed, get me Christopher Lee.
Where
was Christopher Lee in this movie?
Come on.
Oh. This is the solution to most bad threequels we've watched, is put Christopher Lee in it.
I mean, my God, he should have been one of the main priests. Get Max von Sydow, for Christ's sakes. I mean, like, get anybody.
Yeah, it should have been like a multiverse movie where they get, like, Constantine, Father Marin, Stellan Skarsgård, Father Marin, the other Stellan Skarsgård, Father Marin. it's such a... It feels very much like the middle act of Life Force,
but without
the benefit of the first and third acts of Life Force, right. Which are absolutely insane.
It feels like it wants to go crazy as a movie, but it's like that would be uncouth. It's very British.
The best scene, the most British scene is that party, and it's just those two British guys you never see again.
Right, talking about the wine.
It's thorn wine. It's one amazing what they can make out of soybeans. yes. How British are we?
Yeah, they're just complaining about the wine. Just like, who are these doofuses?
I guess it's just like, it is like those, like, there's something old world about it. But I think that also makes it a little bit less scary, especially in this one, which is supposed to, you know, be very modern 1981.
Yeah.
It should have been in America the whole time.
Yeah, I think so too. I think he also should have been like the vice president or something, or closer to like
the poster would make you think so. It's got the presidential seal on it. It's like, what is his goal?
Yeah.
Like, obviously he's, I'm the son of the devil and we're going to like love pain and Jesus is a beta and you know. We're not going to be a bunch of cucks, God.
Yeah, it is. You know what? Also, so much of the Antichrist interpretation in the Kirk Cameron Left Behind movies is so much like this movie, with the same sort of like, well, what's his plan? He's going to take over the United Nations and...
It's like, are they gonna lay waste, or what is his goal?
Is he gonna trigger a nuclear war? What is he?
Because I think, like, if you are indeed following the letter of the Book of Revelations, ultimately evil loses.
Right, exactly.
It's a real rigmarole to get there, but I think if he's like literally okay, this passage says it's been 7 years. That's the 7 years I've been in charge of Thorn, and from the Angel Isle, the Son of God will be born. It's like you skip ahead
there's
a few pages. There's going to be a rapture and some fighting, and then you lose, sir.
Pretty handedly. It's not. There's no question
something
about
it. Someone's going to blow a horn. It's
there's a seven-headed dragon.
It's the Book of Revelations is there's some metal shit in there.
yes, there is. You know,
I just say from an outsider's perspective, the Bible's weird.
It is
man.
Very strange. So my mom, at some point, was in a play all about the Book of Revelations. I don't know exactly what it was about, but there was this poster of this guy sort of like sitting in front of a thing of smoking incense, and there's like this dragon that's like with seven heads, like kind of in front of it. My parents put this up in my room in this house in New Hampshire they had. And it didn't occur to them until I started being like, can you move this picture? Because it's scaring me to death. Just like, can you imagine waking up and seeing this picture of this seven-headed dragon? Like,
It really does explain a lot about you, though.
It does.
I mean, of everyone I know, you are the most likely to come to me one day and be like, turns out I'm the son of the devil.
see, you just got to pull my hair up. I've got the 666 right here.
Well, that's why you still have one tuft of hair. Well, Will, I'm the second coming of Jesus, so I won't tell if you won't.
Yeah, what if they just, like, the Antichrist and Christ just met up and they're like, you know what, this seems like a lot of work. Why don't we just hang out?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, like, it seemed if it is all indeed predetermined in the Bible, yeah. Is it about turning that on its head? Is it about realizing, perhaps we're meant to just be sort of locking horns in perpetuity, so to speak? Because if you destroy me, you set in motion something that's going to destroy you, right. And vice versa, yeah. You know?
Yeah, the mutually assured destruction sort of thing. I mean, it always comes back to when you come right down to it, it's like, well, I don't know. In Time Bandits, when the devil, David Warner, he's talking about how he wants to destroy good and then one of them is like, well, but didn't God create you? And he just blows up his minion and he's like, no, evil has always existed.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's also like the logic of your villain doesn't have to be airtight. You know, it's like we don't have to have every villain be like, you know, Thanos in the MCU where he kind of has a point. You know, it's like,
yeah,
it can be like, oh, you haven't thought this out. You're flawed, you know.
Right. He just doesn't sort of get the cosmic, you know, significance of it all, I guess.
Yeah.
Even though
he can.
Yeah.
Sometimes your bad guy can just be a bad guy.
And short-sighted, too.
But yeah, that's the thing. I think it's a movie with a lot of potential. And a really good lead actor, and I think a really good hook. Like, as the sequel goes, I really like the idea of it, and I'm surprised it hasn't been done in some other form. The Omen franchise is one that keeps going back to the beginning, or even prior to the beginning, because we all love evil babies and evil, you know, children. But, you know, evil adults are compelling as well.
Yeah, it seems like they just couldn't quite land on what they wanted for Damien to be and how they wanted him as a character, you know?
I think you just want your villain to be super villainous, especially if he's supposed to be like the son of the devil. I just like him better when he's a little more like polished and banal.
Yeah,
I know it's no Exorcist 3. Maybe I'm biased because I'm the Exorcist 3 guy, but like it doesn't quite have those big swings that it should have at this point in the franchise.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those... I mean, the thing that... I mean, aside from sort of the more meaty thematic stuff of The Exorcist 3, it really doesn't have that, like, the big directing, like, showcases that Exorcist 3 does. So it all just kind of feels a little limp and...
Yeah, it's everything
it's
in it.
Bad.
No,
it's
everything in it's been done better, especially if it's meant to be the conclusion of what's ultimately a trilogy.
Yeah.
It feels like each one is diminishing, which happens in most franchises, but the best ones level up or go in a different direction or do something completely different. They do an Exorcist 3, they do a Season of the Witch, they do they Tokyo Drift, and maybe that gives you some new perspective on what these stories could be. But this one, it has one great setup, but then it just does all the same shit as the first two movies.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Speaking of franchises where the third movie, I feel like, is a nice shot in the arm and does some interesting stuff. My pick for my first pick for Shriekwell threequel season, I'm going to go with, we have never done a found footage movie here on Podcast Part 3. And I'm really, this is a franchise I've only seen like the first three or four, but I really like this third one. So we're going to talk about Paranormal Activity 3, which if you don't like it, it's like 89 minutes. So
awesome.
This is Omen 3 is the longest movie we're doing this month. I think everything else is like an easy breezy hour and a half.
Yeah, I've never seen any of these, so...
I mean, you could probably plow through the first two in a night. They're super short, but they're both, like... In my opinion, like, with all found footage movies, you either love them or you hate them, but I think they're both... I think all three of these first ones, and then the sort of spin-off one, the Marked ones, are all really effective. And the Marked ones is very different from the first three, because the Marked ones is basically, like, what if Chronicle turned out to be, like, demon possession? Essentially.
Oh, okay.
And it's directed by the guy that did like Happy Death Day and those movies.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
No.
Yeah.
No, the first three, they are very effective in that, like, sort of like you're up in your bedroom at night and you hear a bump down in the kitchen and what the hell could that be? And that's just sort of escalating from there. And they have this continuous lore. And the third one is a prequel. It's set in the 80s.
Oh, cool.
Without giving away too much, it is one of the greatest cinematic celebrations of the oscillating fan you will ever see.
Ooh. And this is one done by the Catfish guys, right?
Yes. The good part of the non-reality TV half of the Catfish guys. Right, not the guy who got catfished.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so we'll probably talk about Catfish. That's a interesting moment in time.
Yeah, I mean, aside from sort of creating a new word in the lexicon,
I'd have to go back and watch the movie and remember how Catfish fit into it all in the first place, because I don't think it had anything to do with the fraud part of things. I think it's more in that third act where Catfish gets kind of sad, really uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. And I just remember all the conversations about how it was a fake or how it wasn't a fake I don't know. Cause it was one of those movies where everyone was like, shouldn't know anything about it going in.
Well, it was marketed like a horror movie.
Yeah.
And so. I think it was one of those ones where it was like, it was real, but it was like, hey, Will, can you believe that tree almost fell on you? Let's go back and film this tree almost falling on you. You know, like that sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's like you did a Jackass stunt just for the sake of it. Now we're going to film it.
Right. Yeah, I think that sounds right.
But Paranormal Activity 3, interesting franchise, surprise hit franchise for a long time. And probably definitely the most successful found footage franchise, I would say.
Yeah, well, because the Blair Witch movies kind of dropped that gimmick,
Also, well, no, the second Blair Witch drops it, but that movie's got its own set of problems. but Blair Witch 2, Book of Shadows, which does not feature a Book of Shadows. I guess there's like in Spain, there's or Mexico. I forget if it's Spain or Mexico. The Wreck movies.
Oh,
there's
five
of those at this point.
Yeah.
But in America, there's like seven Paranormal Activities.
Wow.
Well, Omen 3. Yeah, it's fun. It's fine. We love Sam Neill. You know, Sam Neill. And if you don't follow him on Instagram, he's a good Instagram follow because he spends most of his time just living his best life on his winery, like hanging out with his pigs or like just like, you know, having dinner with Brian Brown or whoever.
Yeah.
You know? He seems like a lovely human being.
And he says, flaccid bosom of Christ.
Flaccid bosom of Christ is like his New Zealand accent just busting through in the third act there.
That line made me laugh so hard. Flaccid bosom of Christ.
Say what you, whatever else, you can tell Damien does not like Jesus.
No.
Which is why I wanted to see them, let them fight.
Yeah, exactly.
Even if it's like a straight up John Wick fight.
You should have hired John Wick instead of those seven priests.
Oh, they're so incompetent, and it made me so angry. Fucking Max von Sydow shows up at the McNeil house, and he's clearly dying, and he still puts up more of a fight than any of these chowderheads.
They suck.
I'm so angry. I've never been... I've watched the Red Sox and Dodgers disappoint me year after year, and I haven't been as angry at them as I have been at these seven dudes. I can't even remember their names.
Like only two of them really like have lines too.
I preferred though the very 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 British astronomers that they work with.
Oh yeah,
those
guys
are great because those guys felt like they belonged in Life Force. Like they should have been like calling up Frank Finley and.
Oh, it's going to. Bring me
the file from 1953. yes, it's clear. We'll show you here where the alignment will take place. Bring me Stephen Rails back.
And then they're sipping tea while they're looking at the charts.
Oh, yes. For the record, folks, if you haven't seen Life Force, I don't know if it's a good movie, but in the pantheon of canon movies and Toby Hooper movies, it is bananas.
Yeah, it's worth a watch. I wouldn't say it's like a great movie, but it's fun.
It's very fun. It's very weird. It's got a Patrick Stewart in an early role, and at the risk of, if this is a selling point for you, some top shelf nudity.
And a lot of it.
Oh my god. Space vampires do not have shame.
None at all. They just wander around naked, mm-hmm. blowing people up with their eyes, yeah. right? Doesn't that happen?
Or they, like, kiss you and you, like, turn into
a skeleton. Yeah,
you kind of, like, get all your stuff drained out of you, like in The Mummy.
Yeah.
Where's that? We need more of that in Omen 3. Like, yes, Omen 3 should have escalated to life force levels of satanic chaos.
Yeah, with, like, buildings exploding. Like, all of London should be on fire.
Yeah, like
does the end of life force.
Open a portal from hell and let all the
demons arrive? Yeah. Come on.
Where are the four horsemen, you know?
Like, go hog wild.
Yeah.
Instead, we get a fox hunt. That's, like, the most exciting thing that happens in the movie.
That looks like the least fun thing ever.
It really does.
Just the amount of effort that's going into catching one fox.
Yeah.
It should be that they have to hunt something more intimidating, like, I don't know, like a bear with a rocket launcher on its back.
And, like, the guy who, like, is like, I know, I'm going to have a fake fox, and then I'm going to trick Damien over. It's like, what? You've got to come up with better plans,
guys. I know that
you
have to kill him with the daggers, but has it occurred to any of them to, like, shoot him in the head with a shotgun and then stab him?
It's just like, why? This plan.
Don't give him time to stare at you with a smirk on his face and turn all the beagles against you.
Oh, man.
The fall off the bridge was a pretty impressive stunt, I will say.
Oh,
yeah. 100-foot drop, apparently.
A lot of good gore, like a little mini gore effects too, like when the ambassador shoots himself.
Oh yeah, he really, it's like in the first movie, it's these like Rube Goldberg-esque, deaths. And in this one, he's like, I'm going to set up my own Rube Goldberg death.
Anyway, Sam, always a pleasure to talk
always.
The apocalypse with you.
Yes. And folks, hope you're having a good Halloween season. It's October. Hope it's a nice autumn weather wherever you are. It's not here. It's LA. We just get, you know, you could put on a sweatshirt if you want. But until next time with Paranormal Activity 3, Will, it's been a delight.
It's always, always fun.
All right.
Please remember to rate, review, and subscribe.
Yes, if you must. Do that.